Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Your chance to win 8 o'clock hour prize. How about a large specialty pizza from the guys at the other place? Next time you hear this.
Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
Be caller number 7. It's a 913-576-7610. You can win a large specialty pizza from the other place. And as I mentioned, the other place has sweet 610 gear. Last time I was in there.
Really?
They had a bunch of cool shirts on to the other place and 610. I'm like, what?
That's sick.
I don't have one of those. They have better 610 gear than we do. Let's go check out the other place. And you can win a large specialty pizza next time you hear that drop. Time to check in with Royals insider Josh Vernier, of course, host of the Hot Stove Show, which aired last night here on 610 Sports Radio. And don't forget, 610 on Thursday nights during that show. He's going to give away a pair of opening day tickets as well. Vern, good morning. Thanks for dropping by. Your interview with Witt last night, tremendous. Boy, was he not happy with the Astros.
No, and I'm curious, as the season progresses, how many guys are that vocal with their sentiments? Because it's really been few and far between guys that are willing to say what Witt said. And what Witt said, in my opinion, seems rather obvious. I think, though, in his case, it's a reflection of that kid that, when he thought he was coming to the big leagues in 2015, at the last moment was told to turn around. They don't need you anymore. You're not going to get your World Series ring. Once that chip was carved into his shoulder in 2013, 2014, 2015, he's always digging that a little bit deeper. And the fact that Jose Altuve is viewed as a far better player than him, when he's worked as hard as he has, he finds it upsetting, because this is a guy, one of the rare guys that never takes a game off, that never takes an at-bat off. And as he mentioned last night, man, if you would have let me know what was coming 20, 30% of the time, I'm hitting 350, I got 25 home runs, and I'm not only an all-star, I'm in the MVP conversation, which obviously would look good in his bank account if you're putting up MVP kind of numbers.
Where do you come down on why baseball is not going after the players, and what do you feel the vibe is around clubhouses as to not punishing any players for this?
The reason why baseball didn't do it is Manfred wanted to get to the bottom of it and wanted to end it, obviously. And the best way to do that was to give the players immunity. Hey, just tell me the truth, and you won't get in trouble. The figureheads of it will be the guys that I ultimately take down. And he gave the players that immunity. They were allowed to be honest and implicate themselves, all the while pointing a finger back at their general manager, pointing a finger back at Carlos Beltran. So I understand why it was done that way by Rob Manfred, because he doesn't have time to deal with liars and half-truths and guys pleading the fifth. He wanted to get to the bottom of it. As far as how the players feel about the opposing players getting away with it, for lack of a better term, I think Witt speaks for a lot of people where it's not jealousy. They're not jealous that those guys were able to put up big numbers by cheating, but it's a disappointment within the brotherhood, right? I mean, Dane and Hughes brings it up a lot. A lot of former football players talk about, the brotherhood that is the NFL. It's the same in Major League Baseball. And like steroids were frowned upon, this is even worse, because who else was doing it? I mean, there was an awareness of steroids. You knew that there were a few guys in your locker room that were cutting corners, so you weren't shocked when 60% of the league was doing it in 1999. But this is an affront to all 29 teams, the other 29 teams in the game, that this team, which was loaded with talent. I mean, Major League Baseball Network came out with their top 100 players. Springer, Altuve, Bregman are all in the top 15. Carlos Correa is high on the list as well. I mean, those guys are stars. Those are guys that I will pay to go watch. I love watching Alex Bregman and George Springer. They're two of my favorite players to watch. So it's much like Barry Bonds when you're like, man, you were already great. Did you really need that extra edge that is undoubtedly cheating? So I don't think the players have an issue with the penalty. It's just, they're not mad. They're disappointed.
Yeah. Correa come off the best to you yesterday? At least he tried to kind of answer questions head on as much as possible. The press conference was a joke, but once everybody got in the clubhouse, it seemed Correa showed the best of kind of trying to put it behind them as much as they possibly could and not have to answer, you know, questions every time they make an appearance.
Yeah, no question, but the bar was pretty low, as you mentioned. I mean, Alex Bregman was almost as if he was acting, he was playing a role of someone that was apologizing and didn't want to apologize. Like, he was purposely trying to come across as insincere. It was an example of some of the poorest PR I've ever seen. Most notably, you know, Jim Crane. He had a rough go. The amount of it that they're putting at the feet, or the kind of questions that they're forcing Dusty Baker to answer, just seems unfair. But you know, it's just it's a tough look for all of Major League Baseball. And it's strange, man. The only time baseball really gets in the headlines is cheating and fights, which obviously is the complete opposite of what Manfred's been going for.
Spring training underway. What are your early impressions of Mike Matheny?
Mike, man, Kling, it's so very obvious how much he's been champing at the bit to get this second chance to showcase what he's learned from his time in St. Louis and how ready he is to do it differently this time. We've seen it across multiple sports, but the coach that has a long run, is let go, takes a few years off, learns more about the game. I always go back to Dick Vermeil. Done in Philadelphia, goes into TV, starts learning from other coaches, and then implements everything that he's learned in job number two, wins a Super Bowl with the Rams. He's very open to a lot of the new analytics. He's open to the idea of an opener in his rotation. There's just a lot of compressed excitement that you know once Monday comes around, and it's the first full report day for this team. That speech that he gives to those guys prior to their first workout is going to be epic. He's brought it up twice now in 2 days, how excited he is to get in front of this team. I think he's appreciative of this opportunity and determined to make it work.
I know a lot of people were critical when the hire was first made. I think I kind of waited and saw the interaction, and I got that feel you have, that like he really learned from the first go round. It can acknowledge that there were some mistakes there, that there's some growth there, and is excited to implement a new way of going about it, which I can completely get behind and go, okay, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, the thing that I was hesitant about and even against the hire at first was, you know, the story of how he handled the clubhouse in St. Louis with, you know, moles in the bullpen and maybe, I don't want to say bullying, but when you have like a Bud Norris narking on players inside the locker room, that's just a culture that lacks trust. And to me, the most important job of a manager from the start of spring training until the end of August is to maintain a cohesive clubhouse. But as you know, you find out more, you hear from Jordan Hicks, who was the reliever that was at the center of it all, that you know he was the one that had a problem with the mole and what Bud Norris was doing and didn't trust Matheny. And you find out that you know Jordan Hicks has since come out and said, I needed that. I was an immature punk back then. You find out that he actually lived in Mike Matheny's home for a while, that they really fostered a pretty great relationship. You hear that Dexter Fowler and him really butted heads and never, they weren't even speaking with one another at the end of Matheny's tenure. You know, as time goes on, you find out that, you know, Fowler says a lot of that was overblown. A majority of it was his fault for being childish. So, you know, much like most fans and even some media members, I got caught up in the hot, salacious story. But then when the facts ultimately come out, you find out it's kids acting like kids. That was my issue with the hire. But talking with the guys over the past few days, right when Matheny got that job, he called everyone on this team, had a long conversation about what you want out of this season, what you want out of your career. And his main message to the players has been, our goal is winning. We're not using the word rebuild. That stuff plays to an Alex Gordon, to a Whit Merrifield. So the players have bought in early on to Mike Matheny, which is obviously good. It will be interesting to see his demeanor around June and July if things don't go as planned for this team.
A lot of young players in camp, that next wave that we're all excited about. Some guys are in camp. Is it just a get your feet wet, or is there a chance someone does make it?
I think it's let's just get your feet wet. They're not going to come out and say that because they want the kids to go out there and compete. But Dayton and Mike Matheny have both mentioned, you know, we need to be smart. We need to stick to our plan, and there's no way the plan is Brady Singer or Jackson Kowar being in the big leagues in 2020, at least not at the beginning of the season. Maybe they can dominate minor league baseball for the first few months and then make their debuts in late June or late July. But I think 2021 is when you should start expecting and hoping to see Singer and Lynch and Bubich and Kowar. I mean, the kids passed the eye test, I can give you that. They got good heads on their shoulders. They understand that you want to come across as confident. You don't want to act as if you're wide-eyed in this first big league clubhouse, but you also don't want to come across as a jerk. You also don't want to come across as if, you know, I've done just as much as Ian Kennedy and Alex Gordon in this game. So they've both Jackson Kowar and Brady Singer have said something to the effect of, you know, closed mouth, open ears, at least this season. Those guys are the future. Those four pitchers, Bobby Witt, Nadalberto Mondesi, those will be the guys that dictate whether or not Mike Matheny has a quality tenure in Kansas City. I mean, we could break down X's and O's all we want, but the reason why Ned Yost is a Royals Hall of Famer is because Moose, Hans, Kane, and Salvi became All-Stars. If Matheny's going to follow a similar trajectory, Singer, Witt, Mondesi, and Lynch are going to have to become All-Stars.
Vern, thanks for catching up. Looking forward to getting after it this season. You're a sure sign of spring right about now.
All right, buddy.
That's Josh Vern. You're a Royals insider. You can catch the Hot Stove Show each and every Thursday night at 6. Of course, you can follow our social media to get all the stuff from Vern. His interview with Witt last night, fantastic, though. Check that out in the on-demand section, 610sports.com, or via the radio.com app. We'll hear more from Witt coming up at 8:30 as well. None too pleased with the Astros. Your chance to qualify for Raytona. Matt in Overland Park wins pizza from the guys at the other place. Chance to qualify for Raytona and Risk It for the Brisket. Comes your way next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. Get off my bumper. Traffic.
Good morning. This check of traffic is brought to you by Lowe's. We still have that crash working northbound I-35 at 87th Street. Expect some delays over there. On the Missouri side, we've got a crash southbound 435 at I-70. The right lane is blocked. And a crash southbound 71 highway just past Truman Road is blocking two left lanes. Do your next home improvement project right by shopping at Lowe's for deals throughout the store. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. I'm Rebecca Miles, 610 Sports Radio. Get off my bumper traffic.
Brisket.
You gotta risk it to get the brisket.
Hamburgers.
You gotta risk it to get the brisket.
Barbecued beef ribs.
You gotta risk it to get the brisket.
Well, I hope you folks enjoyed yourselves.
Let's go!
Get you later on down the trail.
Got a couple things going on. We're going to Raytona qualifier in just a moment. It is Risk It for the Brisket as well. Your chance to win $50 of Smokehouse Barbecue and assorted sauces and spices coming up Tuesday at 8:15. We're all off on Monday. Bink and Kramer will be in here on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
But the normal crew out on Monday, so we'll have Tuesday at 8:15. So I know you got to remember an extra day. Sorry.
Remember, take notes.
Remember my weekend prediction. Tell me if I was right or wrong. I'm the only one here today. Ryan, Bob are gone. So Kling has the prediction. There you go. See, there's half of it right there. I've won you half a barbecue. The other half would be to remember my weekend prediction. Tell me if I was right or wrong. Tuesday at 8:15. Weekend prediction is Kansas will be back in first in the Big 12. There you go. Kansas wins. West Virginia knocks off Baylor. Kansas back in a tie. Heading to that big showdown a week from Saturday between Kansas and Baylor. So there you go. Remember that. Tuesday, 8:15. Tell me if I was right or wrong. And you win a $50 gift card to Smokehouse Barbecue and assorted sauces and spices as well. It is Risk of the Brisket. Also, your chance to win a spot in the second annual Raytona 500. It comes 2 weeks from today on the 28th of February at Extreme Grand Prix in Raytown. The next time you hear this, be caller 6 to 913-576-7610. You're going to win a spot in that race. Awesome trophies, fabulous prizes, Apex Barbecue and Brewer, the Westin, and more. Their trophies are fantastic. They make them themselves at Extreme Grand Prix in Raytown. They're unique, one-of-a-kind trophy. They're awesome. Former Chiefs will be there. Sean Barber, Kevin Lockett, Chris Penn. You can also show up on the day of the event, possibly race, but you can get in by qualifying on the 15s. But we may have some spots available the day of. If nothing else, you can come by $6.10 races during the event on the 28th, and you can use those at another time. So, discount of races as well, $6.10. It's the Raytona 500, all the details, 610sports.com. Got a great text during the break that said, it's great to have Vern back. I would agree, as our Royals insider, and also said, first face dial of the year. Yes. If you're a longtime listener to our show, the last go-round when Vern was the Royals insider, I swear every time, every single time we had him on the air, his face would beep the phone. It has since been lost, but we had a montage of Vern face beeps. For some reason, every time he would talk to us, he would be talking, his face would hit a key, and it would beep. For the longest time, I swore he was not in on it because he would be frustrated. He'd text me, call me, like, I can't believe that happened again. I'm so sorry. God, I did this adjustment on my phone. I don't know why it's doing this. I locked out my keys so this won't happen. First time out of the shoot this year, his phone beeps on his face again. Now I'm starting to believe he's in on it. He's in on the bit.
You might need another montage.
Yeah, we can
might
start
need one.
We can start one with this with today's drop by. Phone beeps on his face again. Got a text from a buddy. Got a text in on the text line. Glad you guys had that recall because it was funny to me too. The minute it happened, right in the middle of it, said beep. Face hits the phone. It's a Vern special. I don't know any other way to describe it. It only happens to Vern. Now I think he's in on the bit. He was probably just doing it this first time just on purpose. So we'll see. We should have like a prize associated with that every week too. I'll work on that. Next time you hear Vern's face beat the phone,
tickets.
You get something. But check out Vern's Hot Stove Thursday nights at 6. You can win opening day tickets on the Hot Stove as well at 6:10 each and every Thursday. He's going to give a pair of opening day tickets away. We had a winner last night, so boom, easy, you can win. Speaking of that, Whit drop by was fantastic yesterday on the Hot Stove show. We'll hear that as part of our big story. And some stories we've missed during the Chiefs run that we'll get to next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Staff Hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. We're doing a little segment I'm calling What We Missed During the Chiefs Run. We're going to talk a little college hoops. Fesco's gone today. Hates college hoops. I can't get him to budge. Can't get him to budge on it at one iota. So we're going to find out what we missed during the Chiefs run. And some of it, maybe, if anything, we'll see. With KU, K-State, and MU, we'll hit all three, boom, 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 real quick over about a 10-minute span here coming up. Check with Matt Tate, KUSports.com, on the Jayhawks. John Kurtz of K-Man in Manhattan on the Wildcats. And CDOT, Carrington Harrison from The Drive, will give us a little landscape of Mizzou. I'm calling it What We Missed or Didn't During the Chiefs Run. Time now for the big story.
Everyone, I'm sorry for the delay, but the big moment has finally come.
It's the big story.
This may be the biggest thing that's ever happened.
If it's what you're talking about, it's what we're talking about.
My God, are you still talking?
On Fesco in the Morning.
Whit Merrifield, Royals now center fielder, I guess we'll call him. He's going to be the open day center fielder. So we can call him center fielder. He dropped by the Hot Stove Show last night here on 610 Sports Radio. Certainly the biggest story in baseball, the Astros, who about this time yesterday, I think is when we started to get into it. It was during this segment where they butchered their press conference. Total PR mess. The owner out there bumbling, brought the manager who had nothing to do with the cheating scandal, who's the new manager that has nothing to say for her other than, I wasn't here. Dusty Baker brought two players out with prepared statements. Just awful. Redeemed themselves a bit when the clubhouse opened and players took questions. A little more culpability in that. But how is it being received around the rest of Major League Baseball? Well, one, Whit Merrifield, not very happy with the Astros.
These players didn't feel like what they were doing was good enough for them to be successful at the big league level. They felt like they needed to do more to give themselves a better advantage to have success. Whether they needed to or not, doesn't matter. It's what they felt like they needed an upper hand in order to have success in this game. And I was talking to Lynn Worthy earlier today, and I personally think if you get accused of steroids, that's it. You should be out of the game because you're doing something you know is wrong to give yourself a better advantage than the guys that you're going up against. This is, in my opinion, worse than steroids because it gives you a direct impact of the game. Steroids is sort of indirectly because you put your body in a better position, but you still got to go out and play the game. Even though you might be bigger and stronger than you should be, you still got to go play the game. What they did was directly giving them an advantage every pitch. And, you know, it's a shame because the ripple effect is enormous. People don't understand that this costs people jobs. It costs people money, lots of money. It costs people opportunities to win a world championship that they might not ever get again. And it's a shame. It really is. I don't know how else to say it, but it's just,
yeah.
It's a black eye for the game. It's a black eye for everyone involved. And it's frustrating because we're supposed to be a brotherhood. It takes a special kind of talent to get to where we are. And once you get once you play a game in the big leagues, you're immediately part of a fraternity, you know, for the rest of your life. So to have that, the brother playing on the other side of the lines, just kind of stab you in the back and say, I don't really care that you worked as hard as you did to get here. I'm going to do this and cheat and do better than you. And what you're doing isn't good enough because I'm gonna go about it this way. It sucks.
Whit Merrifield last night on the Hot Stove Show. We'll see if more players have that kind of overt reaction. Pretty strong reaction from Whit Merrifield, who says the Stros players to him really a letdown.
These guys were some of the best players in the game. These guys were held at a high level. I had immense amount of respect for these guys and what they did on the baseball field. And now that this has come out, I have to discredit everything that they've ever done. I just can't help but thinking, for the last 3 years, if I could have known 30% of the pitches that were coming, just kind of what some of these guys that I played with could have done. I mean, Jorge Soler led all of American leagues in home runs at Kauffman Stadium, which is the biggest stadium in the world, going about doing it the right way. If you tell me that there could have been, I don't know how many at bats he had, let's say 700 plate appearances. If there could have been 300 plate appearances where Jorge Soler knew what pitch was coming, he might have hit 80 home runs. It's just incredible to think about.
Distinctly hear Whit Merrifield saying that was an advantage. Not jealous of, I wish I had that advantage, but imagine if I did. Imagine if Jorge Soler did. I think there's probably a lot of people around Major League Baseball feeling that same way. Like, are you kidding me? They were distinctly getting an advantage. Now, Carlos Correa tried to downplay a little bit of it. I thought he was the best of the Astros yesterday about taking culpability in the scandal and the cheating. But even he said, well, you know, it definitely helped us in the regular season. Postseason, I don't know if it really helped us or not. And basically, it was because the stadiums were too loud. They were double signing at that point because everybody was on to the Astros, essentially. And he was asked, well, did you try to cheat? He's like, yeah, we did. It just wasn't as effective in the postseason. So Whit Merrifield, among those not happy with the Astros. Check out that full interview. Really good stuff with Whit. And about the upcoming season in the on-demand section, 610sports.com. Whit on Vern's Hot Stove Show last night here on 610 Sports Radio. There is your big story. Time now for a little what we missed, or maybe what we didn't miss. We'll see. We know. I feel like we missed a lot during the Chiefs run. We were very Chiefs-centric in town on this show, certainly. All encompassed on that Chief. I mean, it took a lot out of us, right? There was a lot going on. There may be some things we missed, though, including college basketball. Now we're getting to the time where we kind of need to catch up on some college hoops, right? The conference season's past the midpoint. The tournament will be here before you know it. So it's time to figure out what we may have missed on our local schools. We check in first with Matt Tate, Lawrence Journal World, KUSports.com. Good morning, Tate.
Good morning. How we doing?
We're doing all right. Bill Self has to be super pleased with the talk this week of maybe being the best defensive team in the country. He just must be like grinning a little bit. It's like his dream.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, that's what he's all about every year, all year, every game, all game. I mean, it's no secret to anybody who's been following and paying attention that if he had his choice and had to pick between having a terrific offensive team or a terrific defensive team, he would pick the defensive team every single time. Now, of course, he still strives for both. You know, every good coach does. They want their guys to be the best at everything and to do both things really well. And, you know, at times this team can do that, but more often than not, what they're all about is their defense. And that was certainly the case on Wednesday night out in West Virginia. Just an incredible defensive effort to not only win that game, but to stay in it when their offense was giving them next to nothing. And, you know, the thing that these guys are so focused on right now is continuing to just take pride and hang their hats on defense and improve in that area. every single day, but I think there's a quiet confidence with this group that they believe that their offense still has a lot of room to improve and a lot of areas where they can get better and more dangerous. And I think that silently a little bit, they're thinking, man, if we can just get that in going a little bit more and combine it with the defense that we're playing now, we're going to be really tough to beat. And I think that's dead on. I mean, they have so many different advantages and so many unique things that most teams in the country don't have, you know, starting with Udoka Azubuike, but also Devon Dotson, and then, of course, just the way they play and their style and the versatility and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think they really do believe that the defense is going to carry the day, but if they can get their offense going, they're going to be as good as anyone.
Devon Dotson, year one to year two, had an offseason, which he got the evaluation process and seemingly got a lot of good positive reviews. Has he turned that into productive enough year two?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways he has. You know, the things that were true about Devon Dotson last year are still true this year. You know, he's still as fast as anyone with the ball. He's still a nightmare for people to stay in front of in the half court. You know, he's tough. He can finish at the rim, things like that. I think he has taken some steps forward in terms of becoming a better passer. He's still not a great passer, but he does look to set guys up more than he did last year, and that's the most important job of a point guard right now. With Dotson and with this Kansas team, you know, one of his most important jobs is also scoring and leading the Big 12 in scoring. So it's a little different with him than it is with some of Bill Self's point guards from the past. But, you know, he has made some improvements in that area. It's still not natural. It's still not automatic for him. I mean, he's still a guy that has spent most of his life, you know, looking to score and largely being successful at that. So there's still some times where he needs to be reminded or you know, kind of figure out a way to set guys up and get teammates involved. But I do think he's doing that more this year than he did last year. And that was a big thing, I think, that scouts and such wanted to see. I mean, they, you know, the talent, the physical tools, all that stuff is very obvious. It was very obvious last year. But I think they wanted to see if he could run a team and be a true point guard. And, you know, he's still not there completely, but he's definitely made strides this year in getting to that. And again, it's hard for him to do that because they need him to score. So he can't sell out completely and just be a guy like Devontae Graham was a couple of years ago. You remember those games when Graham would, you know, he'd score 6 or 8 points, but his whole focus was, I want to go get 10 assists. And, you know, Devon's not there, and that's a pretty high bar, so it's no shame that he's not there. But he is getting closer, and I think he's been such a consistently solid player for them pretty much both ends throughout the season.
Matt Tate, KUSports.com, joining us. Spurts from others at times. You mentioned Doak and Dotson, obviously. What's the biggest thing that needs to happen down the stretch for a legit run?
They got to figure out a way to make more shots. You know, teams game plan every week on how to take Udoka out of the game, and sometimes they're successful, sometimes they're not. But if you want to send 2 and 3 bodies at Doak, that'll take him out of it, and it should, because the rest of the team, you know, is disciplined enough and smart enough to know that's not the way to play. Doak going 1-on-2 or 1-on-3 isn't going to be successful. So, you know, that's a huge advantage when he's guarded 1-on-1 and they try to play him straight up. It generally doesn't go well for the opponent. So, you know, that's there. And same with Dotson. You know, he can go get his in a 1-on-1 setting pretty much against anybody. But in order for them to really be humming and making the kind of strides and the run that they want to make, you know, they've got to get guys connecting from the outside. It doesn't have to be 10 a game. You know, I mean, he said that all year. If we could just make 7 a game, that would totally change the way this offense flows and the way things go and how teams can defend them. So I think that's very reasonable and realistic, and I think it's something that they should expect. And so that comes down to, you know, Dotson has to shoot it better. He's not shown to be a terrific shooter this year, which was another area teams or NBA people wanted to see him improve. So he's still got room to go in that area. You know, Isaiah Moss is really solid when he's open and squares up and things like that. But he's inconsistent at times too. And so if he could just get a little bit more consistent as that guy they brought in to be the shooter, Isaiah Moss from your squad, Iowa. So you know all about him.
I gave you the exact scouting report before the season started, didn't I? Like, spurty three-point shooter, doesn't play a lot of defense, but can hit some big shots with it. It's exactly what he's been, right?
Exactly what he did the other night. You're right. And you know, his defense has been better than I think most people expected. And the easiest way to see that is you know, the games when he's out there, even when he's making, you know, 1 of 4, 1 of 5. I mean, he'll stay on the floor 30 minutes sometimes. And that's because, you know, Bill Self trusts him. He's not going to keep him out there if he doesn't think he can play and do what they need to do. So he's not a lockdown defender by any means, but you know, he's certainly capable. And so anyway, you know, Moss is, he's their guy. He's their gunner. You know, that guy's going to be able to give you shots, and he doesn't need much space to get him off. But Christian Brown, Ochai Agbaji, Devon Dotson, if they can just find a way to dial it up a little bit more from the outside, again, not jacking threes all game, not forcing shots that aren't there, but just making the ones that are there. If they can do that, that really turns this offense into something that is a little bit more capable of scoring into the 70s on a regular basis. And if they can score into the 70s on a regular basis, they're going to beat a lot of teams, and they're going to have a pretty good chance to make a really deep run, because their defense, I mean, that's back-to-back games on the road in the Big 12 where they held a team into the 40s. I mean, and one of them was ranked in the top 15. That's just remarkable defense. So, you know, they're playing really well, obviously, on that end of the floor. But I think what people are most excited about, again, is that there's still so much room to go on offense, and if they can get there, look out.
Matt, as we wrap, game of the year next Saturday, obviously down in Waco, how many losses captures the league title?
I think I don't know. It's not more than two. I don't see Baylor losing twice, more than twice. You know, and that's, Kansas is going to have its hands full going down there, and you know, I know that's one that KU fans have kind of been circling and eyeing for weeks now, ever since Baylor came in down Fieldhouse and won, and understandably so, but that's no gimme game by any means. It's not just, oh, well, you beat us here, we'll go beat you there. I mean, that's not automatic by any means. So, you know, Baylor's got some work to do, too. There's a little bit left on their schedule, and it ends with West Virginia and Texas Tech, and they have West Virginia this weekend, and you know, so it's not automatic that they're just going to keep rolling, but I think they're as good as anybody in the country. Obviously, they're ranked number one. Bill Self said last week that they're as good a team on February 10th as he's seen in the Big 12 in 17 years, and that's pretty high praise. I think each one of those teams may lose another game, but I don't know that they're going to lose two or three. You know, I mean, I think at this point we're near the end. So Baylor losing three games in conference would be, you know, a borderline collapse. I mean, they'd have to go, 4-3? After ripping off 11 in a row, it's hard to see a team going 4-3. So I think 16-2 is the record, which is just a remarkable record. It helps that this league is down a little bit, and that, you know, some of those teams in the middle toward the bottom of the pack that usually can sneak up and steal one from one of the contenders and make the race a little bit more interesting because of that. You know, that's not really happening this year as much as it has in the past. So I think it is. I think it's a showdown between those two. I think that game next Saturday is it, man. I mean, if Baylor wins, it's theirs. And if KU wins, then it may very well be theirs. So that's what you want. The only thing that would be cooler is if it were the last game of the season, but that's pretty close. So I'll take it. And I wish they played twice again. I mean, that's such a phenomenal matchup. Two top three teams, both defensive-minded, both with guards and different styles, and I think it's just going to be great. I mean, you know, I think that's an early game, so I would take because it won't affect the deadline, I'd take an overtime or two in that one. That would be great.
Matt Tate, KUSports.com.
All about me.
That's
all
right. That's
me.
Right. Thanks for catching up.
Yes, sir. Take care, Josh.
All right. That's Matt Tate covering the KU beat, KUSports.com. John Kurtz, you can hear him on the Faithful to Our Colors podcast here at 610sports.com and the part of the 435 podcast network. John, Wildcats have dropped 10 of 12 and 4 in a row. What have been the major problems?
There are a lot of major problems. I think part of it is K-State just doesn't have a whole lot of quality depth, which is evidenced by a couple of bad recruiting classes, 2017 and 2018. Those two classes, basically what you have left is one role player in Mike McGurl, Levi Stockard, somewhat of a role player as well. But that's about it from two recruiting classes that's left K-State with a bunch of holes on their roster. Right now playing with basically nine scholarship players. Pearson McAtee is one of the technical scholarship players, but he's a former walk-on that was given a scholarship because K-State didn't have a spot to fill this year. I think the bigger issue is just that the three players that K-State was really counting on this year, Cartier Jada, Xavier Sneed, and McCall Maween, just have not developed the way that you'd hoped. Those guys were really good role players over the last couple of years on the Elite Eight team and on the Big 12 championship team, but this year, in moving into a new role, they just have not been able to really up their game, and they're lacking the kind of leadership that they had last year from those three, Barry, Dean, and Cam, in particular Barry Brown. There's just not a Barry Brown on this team that is the guy, the unquestioned leader, that can really put the team on his back and go get his own shot when he really needs to. So that's a quick synopsis of basically what's going on, but you know, the too long did not read version of the whole thing is just that K-State does not have enough talent, enough quality players really on this roster right now. And it's led to a lot of inconsistency and just finding a bunch of different ways to lose.
Yeah, it looks tough to score too. Second to last in the Big 12 in scoring, worst in scoring margin. You mentioned maybe just not enough offensive contributors and then taking that next step. It's a lot to ask sometimes, right? To go from role to that elevated stage. And if it happens, you have success. And if it doesn't, you kind of see where they're at. Fans have ridden the wave with Bruce Weber, obviously. Is the Heat back?
Well, it's a very interesting situation because you have a subset of fans, and it's hard to tell exactly how large it is because they're the most vocal, right? So you hear from them all the time, that have never really embraced Bruce Weber, even through the Elite Eight run of the Big 12 championship last year, and have just been sharks circling in the water waiting for blood, and obviously there's been plenty of blood this year. So you hear a lot of it. I think most reasonable minds understand that seasons like this happen, especially when you lose a senior class like what K-State had. If you're not Kansas, you're not pumping out elite talent every single year, you're going to go through some of these years. Bob Huggins had it a couple of years ago when he lost Javon Carter, Daxter Miles, and that really decorated senior class. Juan Kruger at Oklahoma went through it where they had a terrible season after losing Buddy Hield, Ryan Spangler, and that whole group. Iowa State's gone through the same thing when they lost some of their really experienced players that were inherited by Steve Prohm. So I think it's natural to have a dip like this. Now, K-State's dip has been further than I think any of us expected, and that's the tough part right now. Having this team sitting in last place after being first last year, the drop should not have been that low, and there have been a number of issues that have caused that. But that's kind of been Bruce Weber's MO as a head coach, both at Illinois and in particular here at K-State. Lots of ups and downs. He's had a couple of five wins or less Big 12 seasons here at K-State. It looks like this will be another one. But he's also won two Big 12 championships and been to an Elite Eight, which is more success on the high end than any coach has had since Jack Hartman in the 70s at K-State. So that can be frustrating to deal with, and I get that for fans. But I do think he's certainly a guy that's earned the right to get another year or two to really have everything turned around. So I don't think there's any real heat from who matters, and that would be Dean Taylor, his boss.
Yeah, the fan heat versus the boss heat, totally different things at times. So what is the ceiling right now? Is it playing out of Wednesday night in Kansas City? Would that be the ceiling that the K-State could possibly attain here? Needing those small goals right along the way?
Yeah, I mean, and I hate to say it, I feel like that right now is probably too much to ask. We'll see. I mean, the bottom of the Big 12 is very bad, and TCU is absolutely reeling. K-State will see TCU on Saturday. They've lost six straight and just lost by, it felt like, 70 to Texas Tech earlier this week. So they have a chance to win. But the problem is, the K-State schedule was front-loaded in the Big 12, but a part of that is it got easier. They just lost back-to-back games at Iowa State and then at home to Oklahoma State. So if you were going to really make a push to finish in the middle of the Big 12, you probably needed to get at least one of those last two wins. K-State won't see Oklahoma State and Iowa State again until the final two games of the Big 12 schedule. So who knows where they're going to be at mentally by that point as the grind of the season wears on here throughout the rest of Big 12 play. So to me, What I want to see is not necessarily tied to wins and losses. I think you just want to see K-State's three freshmen who right now are hitting a wall and kind of going through some issues. You want to see them improve and give you hope for the future, because Bruce Weber does have his best recruiting class since he's been in Manhattan coming in next year with three four-star players, four top 150 players, and maybe adding another four-star player that K-State's really interested in right now. So if you can get Dejuan Gordon, Antonio Gordon, and Montavious Murphy, the three freshmen that are on the roster right now, back rolling, then I think, okay, you start to feel like maybe next year you put the young new talent with the talent that's been here on the roster this year in their first year together, and you may have something next year, at least taking a step back toward where this program feels like it should be.
John Kurtz, you can, of course, hear him on the Faithful to Our Colors podcast on the 435 Podcast Network, 610sports.com, via the radio.com app. What you got coming up on the podcast here in the future episodes?
Yeah, well, if you want to go right now, just released an episode on Wednesday, so it's a lot of reaction to what happened against Oklahoma State. But just some thoughts on the big picture view of the program and where things are at with Bruce Weber, how it got to this point. And then also a little bit on Sean Snyder, who just left to go to USC. Obviously, it's been at K-State forever with Bill Snyder, and it's a new move for him, and I think it'll actually work out really well for K-State, for Sean Snyder, and USC. So that's all what's up there this week at Faithful to Our Colors.
John, thanks for the time.
Anytime, Josh.
Get some baseball in, too. He's off calling baseball.
That's right. Denver, Texas, right near Mexico.
The weather's better there, I guarantee you that. Thanks, John.
Hey, take care.
That's John Kurtz, KMAN in Manhattan, also a contributor here on 610 Sports Radio and 610sports.com, and you can check out the Faithful to Our Colors podcast, all things K-State. Does a great job with that, part of the 435 Podcast Network, 610sports.com, and via the radio.com app. And if you haven't been through the 435 Podcast Network, you should. You can go to 610sports.com, click on the button. A lot of different podcasts involving sports and not sports. I have the Nutmeg podcast featuring Sporting KC. This week's episode with forward Kyrie Shelton, but a bunch of stuff. You're a Sporting KC fan. John's got you covered on K-State. Bob's got a couple up there, obviously, involving newsmakers in this town, little history of this town. The Pray for the Push podcast with Steven Spector talks a little game. There's something for everyone on the 435 Podcast Network. So check that out at 610sports.com or via the radio.com app. This half hour brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967. Yes, Chargers do this. One, do this. And it's also the state of quarterbacking in the NFL, where we're glad it's not us. We'll have more on that next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it is the month of love, and you know what that means. You're looking for somewhere special to take your loved one. Well, I'm going to tell you where to take them. You need to take them to Chateau Avalon. Chateau Avalon has been called one of the 10 sexiest hotels in the world, not just by one publication, oh no, by multiple publications. Just last year, one of the 10 sexiest hotels in the world. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And it's also the six-time winner of the Kansas City Visitor Choice Award. Chateau Avalon is different than everywhere else because every room is a suite and every room comes with a different theme. Whether it's Camelot or Tuscany, the Mayan rainforest, the Venetian, whatever it is, you know you're going to get a cool suite at Chateau Avalon. And every suite comes with a huge jetted tub so you can enjoy yourself in luxury. Plus, they have an award-winning lounge with daily happy hour specials. And guys, you can spend your time down there while your wife is in their award-winning spa. And if you mention you heard it on 610, you'll get a free rose petal turndown service in your room. So check them out and book today at ChateauAvalonHotel.com. That's ChateauAvalonHotel.com. It's Chateau Avalon.
It's Johnson County Community College basketball on 1660 The Score and at radio.com.
Right, McKaylin Hughes is three!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here! Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.